to be here now with my beloved soul partners on both sides of the sun. Today, it's I wanted to first to start with the story of how I found your radio station, Wolf's Spirit Radio. The reason why is because I believe that, you know, of course everything happens in cycles, and the synchronicity of things has to be highlighted because it is what reminds us that we are connected to the divine. So, you know, I was in Facebook working with a client about panic attacks, and I published something about the work, and I was contacted by Luella May at the time, and she said, and we had a great telephone conversation, of course, sisters, you know, like one of those when you recognize somebody that you knew before, and she says, I want to interview you on this, and I go, that's great. So we set up a date, we go, and before you know, she calls me and she says, I'm having a problem with the radio station, so we're going to have to, you know, reschedule, I'm so sorry, and so forth. And I remember vividly saying, you know, not to worry at all, I'm sure this is for the best. And for the little I found out, you know, through the conversation of the conflict they had had with the previous radio station, it was obvious that there was not, you know, a resonant mindset, let's say. So I thought to myself, you know, and I told her, you know, this is obviously for the best, no problem. So she calls me a few days later and she says, I got a new radio station and it's great and, you know, you're going to love it and we can reschedule. So, well, you know, great. So far, I have no idea what radio station is or nothing like that. But, you know, when she publishes the when we start, you know, coordinating the interview, I realized that it's, you know, World Spirit Radio, and I go, but, you know, and I go through it, and I go, oh, Bill Brockrider, who I've been following since his first interview, because he touched my heart, and he confirmed, you know, that things were going to change the way I had envisioned for 30 years. So I'm going, oh my God, you know, I'm right there in the place where I wanted to be. So we did the interview, and again, you know, I felt incredibly comfortable, and I want to thank you, David, because of the space you have created that's 100% based on cooperation, community, inclusion, and oneness. And this is the 21st century radio concept. And obviously I can talk about that because I was in media for the, you know, for a good amount of 12 years prior to starting my soul purpose. And I can see the difference. And I ran away from that as much as I could. Because the mindset was completely, you know, the paradigm was somewhere else. So it was in my, it felt like, it just felt fake. You know, it was too corporate, to say it in one word. And my last job was with the Washington Post. So I honor you, and I thank you so much for being such a bright torch, you know, to this incredible journey that, you know, we're all following.
Yeah, I just looked at your website. Would you tell us how you got started with the projects you're working in right now, Luz?
It was 2007. 5 years.
And what triggered you to do that?
Well, you know, I've been a coach ever since I was a child. You know, I was taught, I was modeled critical thinking. I was modeled, you know, the consequences of history, you know, soul-to-soul conversation at all times. So it was like a search, you know, my search. Eventually, I wanted, you know, because of the way life goes, you know, I had to get into sales to support myself, and I did sales and advertising and media and TV and radio for a long time, and even though I hated it, you know, because that was the way I was supporting, I could support my family. But on the other hand, you know, I realized that it was an amazing learning process, you know, because it gave me the opportunity to analyze and to go beyond, you know, the mindset behind, you know, the all this media monster that it's created to brainwash you and to insert the virus of the mind. You know, nothing better than live with the monster than to, you know, to understand the monster, right? You need to learn from your enemy. You know, the best you can, right?
Hold your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yeah, and that brings me to another thing that is one of my favorite quotes on all time, of all times, and changed my life, which is, you know, your enemy is your master. Because your enemy, you know, the person who hurt you, it's the person that's giving you the lesson to expand your thinking and your feeling to a new dimension. And when everything is said and done and you understand the lesson and the experience, you understand that the experience comes with the lesson, or the lesson is the experience, then you know. Then I got lost in my thought, because there's another thing, and these are the two things, right? It's like you understand that you are on the Buddha, that you cannot, that your master is not your enemy, because you learn from him, and once you understand the lesson, then you understand that there was, you know, nothing to forgive. You know, there's no enemy really. And the other thing is, you know, I remember when my kids were growing up, and I swear this is true, you know, I had hanging on the wall of my room, my bedroom, you know, a poster from Einstein saying, knowledge is only experience. And it was not until I could completely absorb the concept that that was the truth that I took the poster down. I didn't know I was doing it, but after a while I looked at it and I go, yes. Because, you know, at the time, this is the 80s, right? At the time, I'm looking at the education system and I'm going, but, you know, it's all completely removed from the experience. So we're educating our kids to be robots repeating some kind of script that doesn't connect with anything in their body, you know, and become, you know, ATM machine and pursue clients like they are ATM machines at some level, you know. And so that's why I never pursued, you know, my kids to go to college, because I didn't think it was a good scenery, you know, for kids, contrary to the common thinking that people, you know, were pushing their kids to go to college.
I'm just reading your little thing up here that you have, but I'd like to read it, but I want to make a slight difference in it.
Sure.
Inspiring millennials master of the art of the entrepreneurial mindset to discover their purpose, reframe their mental model, create their visionary plan, and design their life's blueprint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the hawk mindset. That's the story. Here's the story. I was a coach all my life. In 2007, I decided to move to my sole purpose. It was time. I was already almost 50-some years old. I mean, almost 60 years old, 57, I think. Anyway, so I decided to do this. I moved ahead, and the question was, I can be a very good coach, you know, in so many many situations because I have had the experiences. But I wanted to find one thing that was going to make the most impact in the world and that I could be the best at it. And that was a difficult thing to identify. The person who helped me identify that was Bernie Dorman, who is the chairman of the board of CEO Space. When I started this process, I invested some money in his forum. And I went to one of his forums. He talks, you know, I always, you know, Dave, you and I, all of us, at some level, you know, have been questioning, you know, trying to discern between this duality thing that eats our heart, right? It's like we are divided inside out, and it's so against our nature that we cannot bear it. So you have this division inside. So I always had the perception of overcoming duality, or, you know, overcoming duality or transcending it and incorporating the two, right? Because it's division otherwise. So, but Bernie Dorman gave me the words for it. Bernie Dorman talks about the virus of the mind. And to me that was fascinating because he says that, of course, you know, we are contaminated by this virus of the mind. Now, what does it mean to have the virus of the mind? It means that the root of your thought process is based on fear, which is what we know, right?
Well, and that's what some people know. I don't.
Right. Okay. Some people, but we all know, we're just in a very serious state of amnesia, right?
Correct. But see, we have a name for those people. We call them the sheeples.
Uh-huh.
Because what are they led by? They're led by their TV set, by the music they listen to, by the programs they watch on TV, like mainstream media news, which we call lamestream media news.
Yeah.
Reality programs, which have nothing to do with reality.
Yeah. Exactly.
And auto racing and sports.
Right. So that is a manifestation of the virus of the mind at its best.
Absolutely, my dear, absolutely.
Right. So how does the virus of the mind is inserted? It's inserted by fear.
And when you look at all the movies today they're making, what do? They generate
right. But
massive amounts of fear.
Exactly, but there's more to fear, you know, there's more to fear. Fear is just the root, but fear comes with separation, exclusion, competition, scarcity, secrecy, and non-equality. So it creates the illusion that you're separated from divinity and you're separated from every other human being and you don't have any power to connect back except for your free will, which, you know, I mean, you only can get to it through, you know, unlearning what you have learned anyway, you know, basically. Right? So it was the virus of the mind. And you know what, Dave? I've been thinking about this, and this is what I wrote about actually in that article. You know, if you think about it, it's very interesting because in the 20th century, we did, you know, the big question of the 20th century was to be or not to be. You know, if you think about it, you know, we rediscovered it from the 16th century, you know, the Renaissance, from Shakespeare or whoever wrote it, you know, after 10 centuries of complete obscured Middle Ages, you know, with the ultimate virus of the mind, you know, and really, I am convinced that, you know, what we're doing at some level is like, every so many years, we are kind of, you know, reenacting the Renaissance, because, you know, as my father used to say, you know, the human spirit cannot be tamed, and no matter how much force you put on it, it's going to thrive through, you know, through the crooks of, you know, demented thought. You know, it doesn't matter; it will thrive. So, you know, following that, you can tell that, you know, in the last 20 years, we've had the most advance in technology and science than we had in the last 5,000 years. And at the same time, in the last 20 years, we've had the most repression we've had in the last, you know, probably 5,000 years too, I don't know. You know, it's hard to tell, but, you know, pretty much. So, that, you know, leads me to the next question, which is the question of the 21st century. You know, at some level, I feel that we kind of, you know, played and acknowledged and were aware of the to be or not to be to some extent to go to the next question, which is what we were talking about now. It's either fear or love. And this time you have to choose. It's not a question that you have to answer. You know, this time you choose fear or you choose love. And what does it mean to choose fear or love? So we have already talked about the virus of the mind with fear. And now we can go and decide that, of course, if you choose love, you know, love comes with the exact opposite behavior, which is, you know, cooperation, community, transparency, equality, inclusion, and abundance. Okay? So, now, when you think about the fact that in the last 20 years, we have come up with the amazing reality that matter and energy are created by consciousness? You know, I mean, you can decide that you don't believe that, but this is scientifically proved fact. So, if matter and energy are created by consciousness, obviously, you know, we are conscious beings, and we can literally create all of that, you know, or recreate. And of course, we know, and as you said before, maybe many people don't know, but I think most of us know that we are only using 10% of our brains. And you know, I'm sorry, but who decided this? You know, who decided that we were going to and when? You know, and where is it written that we were going to use only 10% of our brains? You know, and that's where the anger comes, you know, that you need to demand better, you know. You have the right.
All right, we were talking before the show, and you were telling me a little bit about your upbringing from the time you were born. Would you share that with our listeners, please?
Yes. Yes, I want to share today that, you know, the same way there is this incredible principle that we actually learn from the actions of our parents, not from what they say, which is so important to take into consideration because it changes everything. You know, I want to share with you today and everybody else that today is the 1st of July, my father's birthday. My father was born in 17. He would have been 95 years old today. He died in 2009. My father taught me about ants. He spent time with me when I was a child, watching ants and watching their behaviors and their amazing sense of community without a leader. And my father spent hours with me watching at the stars, asking the question, who are we? Where do we come from? And why are we here? Between those two, you can imagine that only between those two, I had a pretty clear idea of the big picture and the small picture. And I want to honor today and share these experiences with my father because they actually, you know, I cannot claim much, you know, except for what I did with what he gave me. But what he gave me, you know, it's the gift of life. He was, you know, the most passionate person I've known ever. He was the father in the neighborhood, you know, who played hide and seek with us. He was the father in the neighborhood that, you know, took us, you know, he had a large Citroën. Remember those cars, Dave?
Yes. Yes, I do.
The three lines? Well, my father's favorite thing in the world was to have that car full of kids and have everybody look at it, and he would say, ah, and we left grandma at home. I mean, my father would walk on the street and stop people and tell them a joke or share a thought with them. And people wouldn't hesitate to listen to him. He totally understood oneness. You know, he was passionate, and his inner child was, you know, very alive, and it had a lot of emotional integrity. You know, the problem with us is that some of us have inner childs that don't have that emotional integrity. And I think, you know, whoever it was, because I think it was my grandmother, you know, the Basque goddess in the kitchen, you know, who raised him, who made him that way, or who gave him those. My father was, he's feminine. You're talking about the feminine, you know. He was the guy that was born in 17 and had the dream of having 4 girls, you know, and he had only me. I was the oldest, and 2 brothers, you know, and of course he loved my brothers, but he was like ahead of his time in terms of the feminine. He was somebody that, you know, wanted to embrace the feminine so much and understood it so much. And at the same time, he embraced his masculinity. So it was very well balanced, I would say, and very much ahead of his time.
Oh, I have to agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he was a philosopher, of course, and he was a avid reader, and he was an entrepreneur, but he was, you know, he would totally share with me, like, everything. I mean, it's like, you know, all the books he was reading, you know, since I was very little. And that was my father and my mother together, you know, both of them. You know, they would take me to the ballet, to the, you know, to the theater, you know. I mean, I knew the classics of literature, you know, by the time I was 8, I think, or 10, you know. I was going through my father's library and reading books, you know. So the other part of my childhood that's so precious is that my godfather was a historian. So, you know, and my godmother was a soprano singer, you know. So that was incredible too, because I was there. They were my great aunt and uncle. And, you know, and they spent so much time with me. And, you know, it's like my grandparents' generation. And they didn't have a child, so my mother was like their child. And I was like their grandchild, plus being the godchild. And you know, talking about stories about childhood, I'm going to tell you a story that you're going to love so much. You know, I'm like 3 years old at my, you know, they live like three blocks from my house, you know, my godparents. So I could walk to their house, and I spent a lot of weekends and vacations with them. So I'm like maybe 2 and something, you know, 2.5 or 3. I have a very good memory of my childhood. So they put me, they are potty training me, and you know, they put me in the potty to poop, and it's like, you know, right after I poop, they go, "Oh, what a beautiful poop!" And they all dancing around the poop and singing around the poop and celebrating my poop. I'm like, you know, oh, this is cool, right? So we you know, we throw the, it's a whole ritual about the, we throw the poop, we flush the toilet, everything perfect. So this, you know, this day, one day, I wake up in the morning, I go downstairs, and I see that in the dining room, you know, there is the lace tablecloth, which means only that there is guests coming for dinner, right? So you know, I go about my day, and by the time, you know, the guests start coming, my nanny takes me upstairs and you know, puts me in the potty. So, you know, and she leaves because she has to help my other nanny to, you know, to finish with the food, right? So by the time I'm done with my poop, you know, I look at it, I look around, there's nobody to celebrate, nobody to sing, nobody to do a thing. So I decided to take the party.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, but wait, it gets better. So I enter the dining room. There's six people sitting around. Two of them are people that I know because they are intellectual people, very close friends from my aunt and uncle. But the other two people, guess who they are? The ambassador and his wife of the United States of America.
What did they say?
So, of course, I go through and everybody celebrates my book. And I go away happily, you know, and flush it upstairs and forget about it. The ambassador of the United States and his wife, you know, I forgot about this, you know, and I remember it lately because I've been thinking about my godfather so much. Because, hold on a second, let me cut off this. So, you know, I've been thinking about him so much because he was such an incredible, you know, influence in my life. And I remember this, and it's like, you know, here I am. It's so funny, you know. It's like, here I am, you know, kind of like today. I was like, what a story, you know.
That is absolutely fascinating, and I did not have anything like that in my childhood.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And this is why I want to share it, because it's so important, you know. No matter what happens, in my life everything fell apart when I was 9 or 10. You know, 9 actually. But I had this, I just had the trust. So no matter how many times I trusted, and no matter how many times I took the risk, and I put myself in the between the horse of, you know, the legs horses, like a friend of mine used to say, you know, I still had the trust, and I still was modeling the trust. That's what I didn't understand, and that was the value, because again, you know, it's the experience, right?
Right.
And it's the shared experience. The problem with these Victorians, you know, and this Illuminati, is that, because we were talking about before, you know, I mean, what we're doing now, it's not more nor less than beating the Roman Empire. It's the same. It got away with 2012 years, since 325 years, you know, in the Council of Nicaea, when they decide that they are going to go after, they are a decadent, you know, empire, and they decide they are going to go after the minds of the people instead of the territory of the people this time. And we have great examples in history of what happened afterwards with Africa and Latin America. You know, I was born in the southern hemisphere, and I was born in 49. It gives me a pretty much, you know, clear perspective of what the 20th century was all about, right? You know, it's all our circumstance, right? I mean, this is like the timeline of everybody. You can find all these answers around, you know, where we were born and what happened around it, right? We are not isolated from the wholeness of things, you know, and the oneness of things, for God's sake. So that was my father, and you know, I was telling my son this the other day, because it's really funny. You know, when my mother left, and that's another story, and actually my mother left a book and so forth, but when my mother left, you know, I was the only girl in the house with my nanny, you know, and of course I spent a lot of time in the kitchen, you know, because I learned it from my grandmother, the Basque goddess in the kitchen, you know, and And my task was to go to the grocery store. You know, that was my only task as a child, right? Go to the grocery store and do the shopping for the family. Well, my father had one rule about the shopping for the family. You know, he said I could not buy one or two or four. It all had to be three or multiples of three. So if we needed something, it has to be three or six if we need more, or nine if we need not more, or 12 if we need more. So you can say that I grew up counting, you know, multiplying three.
Hmm.
And, you know, when he died, which was the 6th, of course, of November of 2009, you know, one of my nieces says, of course, you know, the Basque had to die on a multiple of three, you know, a six, you know. And then we go and add the time of his death. You know, it's 10:35, which sounds 12. So, of course, here we go again, you know. And then my mother dies on December 6th at 2009, at 10:35 in the morning, you know, the exact same. After the exact same hour after a month, you know. And, well, you know, the story behind it is for another show, but what I, you know, the whole thing about my, I don't know, you know, it was something that gave me a lot of perspective, this 3 and 6 number, you know, kind of secret geometry. And there's something else that's happening. You know, he died when he was 92. And my, you know, right now, this is the other part that's really interesting that's happening for me, you know. It's that in 1948 was the year that my father and my mother got married. And it was around April, and then they conceived me in June. 48 was the last Olympics in London ever. It was after the war. It was after 6 years, because the world had not yet recovered from the losses of the war. And, you know, so they conceived me. And I've been very aware of this, and now I am 63.
You know? You're cutting out, Luz.
I am 63 today. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Yeah, so now I'm 63, right? So, you know, today I've been thinking about that for the first time, or for, you know, after a long time, that I was conceived in June 48, and in July, My father went to the Olympics because he was the captain of the water polo team for the Chilean delegation. And he took my mother with him. So, you know, to London. And my mother left a book, actually, and in that book she tells a story about that, you know, for her, imagine, you know, she was the only girl, talking about embracing the feminine, you know, she's the only girl, you know, the only woman with these guys that are the team, right? And she, and after the Olympics, they went on a European trip around Europe, you know, in a bus. So it was an amazing experience for them. And so, you know, the story behind it, one of the stories behind it, it's very funny because apparently they could get to Argentina, you know, Chile, and in Argentina they didn't have any more money. you know, because the Chilean government was not paying for shipping them to London, so they are in Argentina stranded, and they are already, you know, signed up for the Olympics. So my mother and my father, you know, who are these two people who are completely, again, you know, into the oneness of things, look at each other and say, let's call Perón, you know. And before you know, they called Perón, and Perón was the one who lent them the presidential plane to send them to London, you know. So... yeah, so it's fascinating. So I've been thinking a lot about this because of the Olympics in London after, you know, exactly 63 years, you know?
Interesting.
You know? Yeah, very interesting. It's about the cycles. And I'm telling you, Dave, if you do a timeline with people like this, you know, it's like I'm ready to do mine. If you do a timeline, you'll find so many things that are going to connect you to the wholeness of things, because there's always everything there. It's just that you are not looking. You know? Fascinating. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say, and I want to, you know, really honor my father and thank him from, you know, for how much he adored me, you know, and he, the last 10 years of his life, I mean, he was always a light of passion, but the last 10 years of his life, he had lost some of the speech. So at some level, it was like, you know, the stubborn Basque, you know, was erased, you know, from the computer. And the only thing remaining was this amazing spirit that lifted everything in you when you just looked into his eyes, you know. It was a joy to be around him. You know, he enjoyed life. You know, he knew how to enjoy every single second of his life. He was present in the moment as much as the virus of the mind that you know, was inserted in him, let him, you know, or he chose to, or whatever. My point is that joie de vivre, you know, is the joie de vivre. And I grew up around that, and I have to thank him for that, because I recognized that in myself. And the other thing is that for him, you know, it was the equality of people. There was no difference, you know, in human beings and the respect that they deserve, no matter who they are or what job or what color or whatever, you know. He had that very clear. And when I look, and he's the best part, that when I look at my three boys today, they have the same thing. They understand, you know. So happy birthday, Dad.
You're cutting out again.
Happy birthday, Dad, I said. So, you know, thank you for being who you are, you know, and for your strong spirit. Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear now.
Okay, great. So that's the story, you know, and to end up, I want to share that, you know, when he died, they called me, and by then we were totally convinced that he was never going to die, so it was quite a shock, you know. The Pedro Piedra, we call him Pedro Piedra the Basque, you know. So, you know, I get ready to go to Chile. I had done peace with him before, so, you know, it was a matter of health, understanding the transition. And I got there, and my nieces, you know, had gone out the night before and had found somebody on the street who was singing, you know. And they asked her to come and sing "I Did It My Way" at my father's funeral, because You know, how could we not? You know, because that was his song together with Zorba the Greek. You know, Zorba the Greek was his favorite.
Yeah.
Favorite person, you know, character. I mean, he was Zorba the Greek. So, you know, life is trouble, man. You know, he used to say, please, you know, misbehave so that you have fun. You know, he gave me the opposite. Always gave me the opposite message. You know, so we had a funeral, you know, all my nieces dressed in white, you know, and there was this beautiful woman. We walked, you know, from the place where they did the wake to the church, you know, with the coffin, you know, like a procession, you know, in Chile, you know, overlooking the Andes Mountains, and, you know, and the trees and the yards and the flowers and the spring busting, you know, and we're walking, and there is the, you know, his hat on top of the coffin, his, you know, his captain hat, you know, and she's singing, you know, with a little old radio, you know, those portable radios, you know, to accompany her with the music. I did it my way. And I know he was dancing like Zorba the Greek on top of that.
You know, I can visualize that in my mind as you speak.
Yeah, that was my father.
What a marvelous father you had.
Yeah, I did.
You're getting away from your mic again.
Yes, no, I'm here. So, I'm just breathing. So, if you want to take a break and play the song, and then we bring the rest with Alex, that would be great. How are we doing with time?
Oh, we still have 3 minutes before we take a break.
Oh, great. So, is there anything you want to...
Whatever you want to talk about, my love. Whatever you want to talk about.
Okay. I guess a minute of silence would help.
We can do that. We will have a minute of silence.
Yeah.
My friends, we're back.
Good. Thank you so much for that. That was one thing that I learned through life, that silence is so necessary sometimes.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have times here, we have what we call the magical sound of silence here on Wolf Spirit Radio. And that's okay.
Yeah.
We don't have to keep you flooded.
Yes. That was part of the coaching I did with the salespeople, you know, to understand the silences and to engage in the soul conversation with whoever you're talking, you know. We're too used to fast forward without the silence.
There are times silence is deafening because of the fact that you can think.
Yes.
Which is what the mainstream media news doesn't want you to do. It's what other talk hosts don't want you to do. They don't want you to have time to think except what they're talking about without a chance to reflect upon what you have heard. And I think we're going to play two songs. We're going to go with Frank Sinatra, My Way. And then, in honor of your father today, The Last Dance. We will be right back, folks, in just a few minutes.
Great. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Luce. We'll be right back, folks. Enjoy the music.
And now, the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I've traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets I've had a few, but then again too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all and I stood tall and did it my way. Laughed and cried, I've had my fill, my share of losing, and now, as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that. And may I say, not in a shy way, oh no, not me, I did it my way. For what is a man, what has he got, if not himself? Then he has not to say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blow and did it my. It was my the last dance. We've come to the last dance. They're dimming the lights down. They're hoping we'll go. It's obvious they're aware of us. The pair of us alone on the floor. Still I want to hold you like this forever and more. It's the last song. They're playing the last song. The orchestra's yawning. They're sleepy, I know. They're wondering just when will we leave. But till we leave, keep holding me tight through the last dance. Each beat of the last dance. Save me the first dance in your dream tonight. When will we leave? But till we leave, keep holding me tight through the last dance. Each beat of the last dance. And save me the first dance in your dreams tonight.
Brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, we're back with Luz Agrabena. Is that better?
Oh, perfect.
This is her first show, my brothers and sisters, and she's telling us about her life and how she got to be where she is. And her son Alex is going to join us in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
And this has been positively a fascinating show so far, and I got a feeling it's going to get even more fascinating as we go on. And don't forget, at the top of the hour, after this, we have who? Jeremy Perrone from Scotland with William Stellings, who's a chrononaut, which means he's a time traveler. JP always has fascinating shows. He's also one of my producers. But I'd like to take a minute and remind you folks of the donate button up there in the upper right-hand corner. That's how we keep Wolf Spirit Radio going. And we do the best we can with what we have. That's why we now have the new little button up there. If you have a smartphone or notebook, you can download a player. Or if you have a Droid, you can download the WinApp player for Droid so you can listen to us no matter where you are. And we're on the air 24/7 except for the time that I take to do maintenance on the servers, which is once a week, and I try to do that late at night where we have minimum interruptions. But I want to thank Luz for taking the time to get her story out, and she has a fascinating story and what she's about. You have no idea, but she's about waking us all up. And Luz, my dear, you have the mic in the floor, in the spotlight, in the soapbox again.
Thank you, Dave. It is such a pleasure to be here again, you know, after that great break. With, I did it my way. So I wanted to talk. Let me start this. The way I envisioned the radio program is to have, you know, two people kind of, or more people or less, whatever, tell a story about anger and fear, and then, you know, invite other people to participate. I even have a social network where, you know, we can, people, so they have questions, you know, we can answer all the questions, and we are all there to share our stories, because the more we share our stories, the more we awake the compassion and the empathy and the reality that we are one, and we're all in this together, and there are no differences except for the experiences, and the experiences are there to complement the divine in all of us. So the reason why anger, it was so important to me, is because the title, you know, says it all. I really believe anger is a gift from divinity to voice. Wait a second, let me, I just edited it for the last time, so I didn't remember. It is, anger is a gift from divinity to voice your right, to voice your right to demand better. Okay? You know, we can understand all of it. The problem is that the voice is the one that has been, you know, repressed. So when you repress the voice, you know, then anger becomes something else. You know, becomes violence. And then it's misplaced violence. And I want to talk about that a little more, you know, to elaborate on that. So, and basically, you know, to talk about this, the most important part, I think it is that I am a pushover. I've always been a pushover, you know, attracting bullies, and of course, you know, pushovers usually have a problem with receiving, and bullies have a problem with giving. So the anger, you know, whether, you know, the bully is manifesting actively the anger, you know, the pushover is doing it passively and exploding every once in a while, because at some level it's telling himself or herself that she or him has no permission to feel anger. I'm pretty sure, Dave, that this story was pretty reinforced by the Victorian, you know, the Victorian time, you know, because, you know, it's a thing about, you know, I am abusing you, but you don't have the right to say anything, because bottom line, what you feel is not important. And the thing is that anger is an energy, and it is, you know, a feeling, and an energy and a feeling, you know, you just cannot pretend they are not there, because they take, you know, a form of their own. And you know, the result of that misunderstanding, which comes from the virus of the mind, and the idea again is, you know, it's the same that's happening in the world now, you know. I'm abusing you, but don't say anything, because if you say something, you're a terrorist. So the bottom line is that, you know, we are all underneath it all angry, because our voice has not been acknowledged, you know. So the idea is to, you know, understand the anger and use it to assert ourselves when, you know, when we are attacked or when we are mistreated. There is a French philosopher, I'm not going to say anymore, I'm going to introduce my son Alex, and I want to say one more thing. There is a French philosopher that touched my soul with that. He asks the question, and he says, what is the source of human suffering? You know, his name is Gaston Bachelard. And he answers the question, and he says, it is in the moment we hesitated to speak. It is in the moment we chose to remain silent, to assert ourselves when we were attacked. So, you know, when you talk about anger, you have to ask the question, you know, and determine, who are you angry at? You, yourself, because you were powerless to assert yourself, or the person who executed the aggression on you? And of course, you know, you're going to find is that you're angry at yourself, and you first have to forgive yourself because you were powerless and you couldn't do better, and you were doing the best you could with what you had, you know. And the reason why it's so perfect that Alex is here with me now is because Alex is one, you know, your children are your teachers, and Alex is one of the people who taught me the most beautiful lesson about anger and about forgiveness, you know, that I have had in my life. So, anyway, Alex? Here is Alex. My middle son, Alex.
Hello.
Hello, Alex, and welcome to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Thank you very much. I am the middle child, so I got beat up by my older brother, and I abused my little brother, so... That's how we roll.
All right. I have a question to come out of my chat room.
Sure.
Shoot.
Perhaps the two of you can describe some tips to better make the transition out of the fear mode. I have met my inner child and my nagging ego is quiet. Two, anger has come out from areas that I did not know existed. How would you answer these questions and comments?
Okay, you want me to do this one?
Sure.
Well, I would say that just based upon the experience, if you are confronted with anger over situations in your past, to not be fearful or scared, but to embrace those and... In all honesty, just be content that you have finally, they have been brought to the surface to a level where you are able to acknowledge them and move forward. The problem with those situations is that when you are confronted with these angry fear modes, your general reaction is to detour or, you know, just cast aside those feelings out of fear. You'd prefer avoid the situation. You don't like the confrontation. You don't really want to talk about it. That's pretty much how everybody has been raised. I mean, aside from me, myself, we were always encouraged that when we do have these angry moments, that it's okay to lash out. It's okay to express ourselves and let it go, because the idea was that once you let your feelings flow, you can let them go. I would definitely say that if you have a problem where you're feeling that you are finding this inner child, but it's difficult to maintain this sense of freedom within yourself, to please do not just ignore these little feelings that you're having about anger. You need to really acknowledge them, embrace them, you know, be okay with them, understand why they happened, and most of all, forgive yourself. If you find that you have done something that you know gives you little space to move forward, It's not over yet. You know, you have much more to learn, and you definitely need to really, really focus on maintaining a positive inner child attitude, while also embracing and speaking about these moments confidently and with conviction, knowing that they are in the past and that you are a better person and that there is more for you after the fact. That would pretty much be my answer.
Yeah, what do you say, David?
I absolutely agree with that. Except I took my little kid out and I said, look, you have run my life, all of my life. You're not running my life anymore until I tell you you can come out. And he comes out every once in a while when I let him, but he comes out now and he has fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that every time I get on the radio station and I'm on part of a show, that he's out here having fun.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So, you know, this one thing I want to share with the audience about Alex, because, you know, now that he did this incredible I love the way he thinks. I just always fascinates me the way he thinks. But anyway, we had, you know, talking about anger, we had a situation when I was in the process of divorcing his father. That was a very, you know, it was one of those things where anger is misplaced and not addressed, you know, with the right person at the right time, and then everybody pays for it around. It's spilled like the virus of the mind, right? So it was a situation where, and I actually included the story because I wrote this story years ago, you know, in the link you have, so everybody can read the story. But you know, it was a situation where I was very frustrated. I was about to. My husband was having an affair with somebody 17 years younger than me, and I was 50, and it was like that jump in that moment in my life. You know, that it was like, yes, you know, I can do this or whatever. But it was really hard. So, in any case, a situation was created where, you know, my oldest son, Max, you know, who's 6 years older than Alex, you know, I told him to call Alex because he didn't want to come for dinner. Actually, I will never forget this because I was cooking ramen for them. And when you know, it's like for me to cook ramen for them was like the ultimate. You have to understand, I was brought up in South America and food is my thing. So, you know, cooking ramen for my kids was not, it was a disgrace. Anyway, so they engaged in a fight and I didn't intervene. And what happened there is that my oldest son was misplacing the anger he had with his stepfather to Alex. And at some level, I understood that at some level, I didn't even, you know, stop the fight to defend Alex, and I broke his trust. I broke, you know, all the trust he had for me, you know, ever. And that was a huge story around it. But I just want to say this, which is important. Of course, I acknowledged it. I had to forgive myself. I had to accept it, go through the pain of it, because it was so painful to watch him be angry. And at the same time, it was so enlightening to me and so fascinating how angry it was, because he had like foam coming out of his mouth with anger, and I totally understood it. You know, how could he not? You know, so that changed many things. But anyway, move forward, like maybe a year later or something. You were maybe 16 at the time.
Uh-huh.
So maybe a year later, we finally can have a conversation. We've had several conversations about this. We've been healing this, you know, this wound. Okay. So what happened is that I'm having a conversation with him and his girlfriend in his bedroom, and I say, Alex, I acknowledge all your pain, and I am so sorry for what I, you know, for propitiating the situation, and I take full responsibility for it. And I would do, you know, if I could go back to that moment, I would change it, but I can't. All I can do, I said, is change the present and the future, and make sure that that will never ever happen again. And, you know, but I cannot change the past. And you know what he answered? He said, "Mom, when you acknowledge the pain in the present, it doesn't only change the present and the future, but it also changes the past."
How very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of deep for a 16-year-old, I'll be honest. It was very... I could say that, you know, those... It definitely was difficult to do those things. I was always brought up to acknowledge my feelings, and you know, when the whole divorce thing happened, I was convinced that I was fine. I understood what had happened.
Yes.
I was a little disappointed in my father because he had technically lied to me, and I had actually been brought over to this lady's house on two separate occasions, in which he told me was a friend of his house, you know. So you know, when everything had happened, I had, you know, I didn't necessarily rebel. But I did kind of, you know, it was like silent warfare, you know. I would do things, you know, I acted out, but I wouldn't say anything, and I would play like it was all good. So I was very, very passive about it. But I mean, you know, we've definitely done a lot of healing. Things have changed. We have progressed to a level now that is very healthy. But shoot, you know, when it comes to being angry and being the pushover and all that stuff, you know, I'm almost thankful that she was this way, because I'm able to, you know, people say that you have to make your own mistakes in life, but there's nothing wrong with learning from other people's mistakes and not making the same ones. And that's where our issue lies, because when you're always telling, you always have people that you know, and you're always trying to help them, or vice versa, and it always seems that no one is willing, like, they'll keep on making these same mistakes, no matter how often they talk to their friends or get advice from them, telling them not to. And they'll constantly punish themselves over and over for the same thing, which I found to be very, very ironic, because, like, you know, we're the only animal in the whole world that punishes themselves over and over for the same mistakes, you know? I mean, we have three dogs at the house, and if you just look and acknowledge this in essence the humanity of animals, you know, they are extremely good teachers. You know, to be able to move on from an incident with such peace and happiness is something that I admire and I look for all the time. And you know, it's definitely been something where I have been learning and having a tough time trying to, like, really move forward from these moments, really not punish myself for the same thing. You know, I have, you know, I'm about to be 30 years old, and I'm now totally okay with these mistakes that I've made. And I am not only okay with them, I am finally not that pushover anymore. You know, I stand up very, very strongly for what I believe in. And I have, this has been, over the last decade, I have allowed several people. I mean, I've moved around, let's say, 8 times in the last 10 years, and in those 8 times, I have, in essence, taken in somebody who needed help. You know, somebody that I could consider a friend. Each time that I did that, the person took advantage of me. They wouldn't do what they say they would, and I constantly allowed this to keep on happening. And life kept on throwing this lesson at me, because after the first time of allowing somebody to live with me who needed help, I told myself I wouldn't do it. I'd move to the next spot. Someone else I met needed help, and I helped them. Same thing would happen. And it happened 10 times. And finally, by the final time, the person that I allowed to live with me and help me was the least annoying and least manipulative out of all the groups of people that I had been with, but had just let me cross that threshold of, hey, you know what, enough is enough, I will not stand for this anymore, and, you know, I'm grateful that, you know, I mean, although she's learned this lesson over the last decade herself, I am about 30 years ahead right now, and I am very, very content with that, because I have several people and friends who, you know, do have college educations, do have degrees, who honestly are completely lost. They thought they had it all planned out, and everything is just not working out as they wanted it to, and they have no idea how to handle it. And, you know, the education that I have received through life has prepared me more than any education can through a system of academia.
Alex, I understand exactly what you're saying about learning from animals. I have a purebred wolf who lives in my house. I have 2 other purebred wolves. I have 4 half-breeds and 4 other dogs and 3 horses.
Wow. You know what we're going through. I love animals.
I have 5 college degrees. Actually, I have 6 college degrees. Mm-hmm. But not like I have learned from these canines and wolves and horses and indigenous native elders I speak to, that I have learned so much that I feel like my education is just beginning.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I know many things, and I'm a master of none.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a very, very common Einstein quote. All I know is that I know nothing. I love that.
I just wish I understood everything I know.
Yeah.
That's my comment on that.
Exactly. Uh-huh. For sure. I have a friend who made this comment to me that I thought it was actually just ridiculous. You know, one of those typical guys who thinks he knows everything, you know, very intelligent, but to the point where his intelligence, you know, masks and blinds him as to what is around him. I had given him an experience or a story of what I had done, because we are in the same field together. And, you know, I said that I had gotten so much better at what I do based on a terrible experience that I had in the past. You know, I had like a year or two of horrible experience in this field. And he says, well, bad experience isn't good experience. And I looked at him and I was like, that's the most ridiculous and dumbfounding thing I've ever heard in my life. For someone who is so smart, I've never heard anyone sound so stupid. And, you know, experience in itself, the word experience in itself is progress. You know, so like, I mean, just to say that any sort of bad experience isn't good experience, it is truly ridiculous. You know, the only thing that is, that could possibly make that a valid truth is if you don't learn from that bad experience. And that's where the argument lies. You know, if you don't learn from it, obviously it's not a good experience because you took it for granted. But if you, take what you learned from that and do not make those same mistakes and really progress as a result, then it is truly the best experience that you could receive.
Alex, you have a wisdom that goes far beyond your earthly years.
I do appreciate your saying that.
Well, with a mother like yours, I can understand that.
Oh, we've had our moments. We have had our moments. There's no doubt about that. I mean, this will just give you an idea. I'll tell you a story that happened when we were very young. My eldest brother, you know, is now a very successful, defined within limits, in the corporate world. He is a GM for a huge restaurant chain, the Cheesecake Factory. And but, you know, he has a checkered past. You know, when we were younger, he had basically gotten in with the wrong crowd and ended up getting in trouble with the law. He was incarcerated for about a year. 6 months into his term, and this is the kind of mother that we have. This is the kind of the realism and the strength it takes to really truly raise kids to be true men and people in this world. At 6 months, they asked her, he can be released.
Reconsideration.
But they're going to reconsider his release, okay? And she said, no, he's not ready. Leave him in there another 6 months. Okay? You can only imagine what it's like for a kid, a teenager at 17 years old, you know, being arrested, being in jail for 6 months, and his mother having the option to take him out, choosing to leave him in there for another 6 months.
Well, what happened is that he was due for reconsideration and he was going to go to Europe after that. So the same day that we were, the day before we were doing reconsideration, they call me and they tell me that he's been going through this program, which was, you know, whatever, therapeutical, very strong program. And he wasn't ready. The counselor told me, she said, he's not ready yet. And you know, why don't, the 6 months didn't mean jail in 100%. It meant press.
Like a halfway center.
Halfway house. So they said, you know, it would really benefit him to finish the process because, you know, he was under, you know what I'm talking about, Dave. He was totally under that spell that was created in the 90s about, you know, Scarface and the violence of rap.
Yeah, with hip-hop.
So this was, he was one of the victims of that whole scenario that was completely fabricated in the music industry. So I have that story, you know. That's a whole new book, you know. And he wasn't ready. And his lawyer ended up joining the Peace Corps because I kept telling her, you know, I'm not here to save him time. I'm here to save his whole soul. You know, so what happens that he did the halfway house in the end and then he went to Europe and he was much more prepared and whatever. But, you know, that was the story.
Yeah. So this man to this day will tell you that it was the best thing that she has ever done for him. And had he left when they asked, he knew for sure that he would have gotten back into the same habits. And so what I was getting to on this is that, you know, this was a turning point of underlying anger for myself as well, because the day that she allowed him to, or gave the word that he was going to be left in there, I was very young at the time. I was only, I think it was 11. And, you know, I was in the 7th grade. I had just finished a gymnastics kind of like meet at my school, and I had gotten home. And that night, you know, my mother seemed very agitated, anxious, and just seemed overall just kind of, you know, under the weather. And I didn't really necessarily know why, but, you know, I just still behaved the same way I did. And I had basically, you know, pushed her buttons a little bit. That night we had argued about me putting my clothes on to go to sleep and all this stuff and whatnot. At one point, she ends up basically, she took out a little anger on me. And as an accident, she hit me with this, it's like one of those little
water bottles.
Those little rubber, they're like rubber bags that you put for your back for therapeutic. You know, you fill them with hot water and you lay on them, you know? And this water bottle full of steaming, boiling water exploded on me. It ended up giving me second and third degree burns on my shoulder, back, chest, and a little bit on my face and neck. From that day on, you know, she was, you know, very, very, very sad and apologetic for it. You know, was very disappointed in how she had reacted. And, you know, I can't lie. You know, I was very angry for a long time. And it was difficult for me to forgive for that, to be honest. But after knowing the story and understanding the pain that went along with it, I don't blame her, and I necessarily don't regret it at all, because me and myself to be honest with you. I used it as kind of like a, in school, I used it as kind of like a sympathy vote, you know? I was always positive, even in the face of adversity. This feeling and this sort of, you know, unity and love that we have in our family has come at a cost. You know, this doesn't just, you know, for people that say that oh, you guys, you know, you have a very tough life and it's a perfect this and that, you know, and you guys have a, you know, such a loving family and, you know, success is defined by one's own love of themselves and all this, you know, we have gone through pain. We have gone through struggles. Our paths have crossed and winded and turned and flipped upside down. We've had a tough ride, and it's always possible. There is it's never too late. There is nothing too bad or too strong or too awful for you to forgive and move forward. You know, forgiveness is a very, very powerful tool, and you know, it's correlated with love. So it's just one of those things that it just kind of says, no matter what you've gone through, no matter the pain that you've felt, you know, things happen for a reason, you know, and these lessons are given to you as kind of like a guide, you know, for experience. Go figure, the word will come up again. So that's exactly. Just what I just kind of wanted to give an idea of what people who are listening, that, you know, it's not over till it's over. And, you know, so just kind of, you know, mull on that a little bit.
And what people don't realize about forgiveness is when you forgive, you forget. Because
yeah.
If you continually remember that, you're continually living in the past and you haven't truly forgiven anyone for anything, and in particular yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And again, if you understand, if you're really understanding that everything happens for a reason, and you move forward with the pain and embrace the pain and move forward, then you have a pretty clear idea of what's happening in your life, you know, and who you are, and you're connecting more and more with the source. Mm-hmm. And basically, believe it or not, you know, I took so many risks in my life that I am afraid to look, you know. When I look back, I go, how in the world I took all of those risks? Well, I needed to take them for some reason. It was almost like I needed to go through every experience possible. And, you know, Jackie Kennedy says something that I always loved. She says, you know, in the end, you cannot separate the good and the bad. You know, you cannot separate them. They are part of who you are. You know, and that's what forgiveness is, because if you understand those experiences as lessons and jewels, you know, to move, you know, of wisdom, then, you know, you can, then there's nothing to forgive.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Very true.
What I love about the radio shows we do here on Little Spirit Radio is the wisdom that comes out.
That's all on you, darling. You're a genius.
I don't know about that. My son is a genius. His IQ is higher than mine.
Genius is a relative term.
Thank you. But we have about 20 minutes left on this show. If anybody has any questions they would like to ask, you can ask in the chat room or you can call into 775-657-5973. We'll be glad to take your calls. Again, that number is 775-657-5973.
Cool. You know, there's one more thing that I was gonna say. There's this quote that I also was listening that I have, and this one honestly is like, it's a very, it can mean so many different things, but the way I see it and interpret it is based also upon, you know, self-acknowledgement and not necessarily, you know, a kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like, it doesn't have to be work-related or like career-based, you know. Winston Churchill wrote this one, and this one, I really do love this quote. I think it's an amazing quote, and this is like, it's basically based on, it can be interpreted to apply to everything, especially emotional distress. And it says, to every man there comes that special moment when he will figuratively be tapped on the shoulder and offered the chance to do a special thing unique to him. What a tragedy if that moment finds himself unprepared or unqualified for that work which could have been his finest hour. That really resonates with me a lot. You know, it says so much. It says, it explains pretty much everything. I mean, without even saying it, the guy says, let it go and move on. Otherwise, you're effed. You know what I'm saying? So, like.
And yet, if you look in his life, he's a typical politician because his actions did not follow what his. Because three times Adolf Hitler tried to make peace with England during World War II, and three times he was told to go get. By Winston Churchill.
Yeah, and Nietzsche is one of.
That's what's so crazy about it. You know, is that you know, underneath it all, these people are, you know, they really are visionaries. They really do know what they're talking about. It sucks that his quote also applies to himself. You know,
the actions.
You know, like his actions.
Walk your talk.
Exactly. You know,
you have to walk your talk.
He's unable to walk all this talk because of.
Because he sold his
exactly with the situation he's been he's put himself in, you know. So it's almost like he's acknowledging his fault and as a result saying
yes.
You know, giving this quote to others so they don't make the same mistake
exactly.
He makes.
Do what I say, don't do what I do.
Yep. Exactly. Do as I say, not as I do. It's I learned that often, especially in school. They love to tell you that.
That's a school system, all right.
That's like constructive criticism, right?
Yeah. Very much so. I didn't know this was a comedy show.
If you can't have fun with your life, what good is your life? And we have a lot of fun on Wolf Spirit Radio. In fact, the next show coming up at the top of the hour is Jeremy Perrone with his show Ever Beyond, and his guest will be William Stillings. And at time 59, I'll turn the stream over to him, then I'll get this work on getting this show up while I listen to that, and I have to talk to a lovely lady named Leah Juarez, who has a neat show that I think is going to fit right in with a lot of other things we're doing, because we are bringing forth Divine Feminine on Wolf Spirit Radio.
Fantastic.
And I was worried in January where I thought, you know, where I should try to get Wolf Spirit Radio to go. I haven't done nothing, and it's coming together because the Creator,
exactly.
Mother, and Father are making sure I'm doing what they want me to do.
Exactly.
Yep.
Because
Wolf Spirit.
Yeah.
And what is the wolf spirit? It's about survival, caring, protection, unconditional love.
And you know, and
that's what it is. That's their pack,
yes,
right there.
And you know, Dave, that reminds me of one of the best books written of all times, which is Women Who Run with the Wolves, talking about the woman, you know, the woman's spirit and the feminine. You know, that was the book that I recommend to every woman on earth, because that was the book that gave me the behavior of the wolf to apply to my life and stand up and assert myself. So, anyway, that reminds me of that. Yeah. And there was something I wanted to mention. When Luella interviewed me, we were talking about violence, about anger becoming violence when you suppress it. And there was something here and you had a question. You had somebody in the audience saying that you know, what happens with people who are, you know, who had such a bad childhood, so neglected and so hated and so, I mean, so broken their trust that they become serial killers, you know, and why some people choose, even though they have been so abused, to not, you know, how does that happen? That was the question. And I wanted to point out something that I have that's very... Yeah. What? How much?
Oh, I clicked on a link.
Okay.
What was the name of that book? Was that The Women Who Run with Wolves?
Women Who Run with the Wolves by Clarissa Pinkola Estes.
Could you put that in our chat here on Skype?
Right. Sure. Now, so what happens? Okay, let me. Clarissa. Okay, I got it. So we're talking about that, and I want to point out something that's incredibly important. I mentioned this earlier, but you know, one of my heroes is Alice Miller. Alice Miller is the woman, talking about the feminine. I mean, she needs to be honored, and she's not that honored. She's a psychologist, psychiatrist, what's the other? Well, you know, she studied the human behavior, you know, and she was the one who said that Hitler would have never made it if it wasn't because of the whole generation of abused German children that was with him. She wrote a book called The Truth Will Set You Free. And she makes a point that I completely agree with this, and I invite everybody in the world to you know, to start applying. She says that, and she did a lot of studies. She completely confronted the status quo, Dostoevsky, Bush, sorry, Freud. sorry for the flip. Freud, Jung, and so forth, because she was the one who said that violence is not genetic. Human nature, it's not to kill and to harm to other human beings. So what she found in her studies of serial killers is that, or people who have been incredibly neglected in childhood and incredibly abused in childhood, is that most of the time, but I think 100% of the time, the difference was in only one thing, and it was in the fact that that child encountered in his or her life one person that acted as an enlightened witness and was able to convey the message to the child that he was valued and his feelings and his being was valued. Whether it was with a look, whether it was with mind, whether it was a teacher, the mailman, whoever it was who encountered a child that was abused, that's, or somebody in their family. That's the difference between becoming a serial killer and not. And my perception, in my experience, I really believe that there's no difference between the pain of the serial killer and my pain. The only difference is that his or hers is more intense than mine. the only difference, but the pain of being separated from divinity and from the divinity of our fellow human beings, it's the same. And that's what makes us equals. I wanted to mention that. If it makes sense.
It did. I had my mic muted.
Okay. So anyway, you know, that was one thing. So how much time we have? 10 minutes, right? How much we have?
9 minutes.
Okay. I have a story about fear, which was the one that totally... Maybe I can tell it in 10 minutes. It's a story that totally and completely convinced me or gave me the sign that I was ready to go out in the world and share my experience as my life purpose. It had to do with the thoughts and how we create our reality. It was February 2007. I was going to see a friend because I had already resigned from my job at the Washington Post and I was starting a book. So it is February in Washington, D.C. I'm taking the restaurant driveway. It is frozen and snowing, freeze, you know, really frozen. But just started... snowing. I'm a pretty good driver and you know, I've driven through anything, everywhere in the world. So, you know, I'm just, you know, doing my thing. And all of a sudden, I completely lose control of the car. And I start, spinning. So, I want to share with you my thought process there because I am convinced. And this is the way we create reality, okay? My first reaction, my very first thought in the situation was, do I have any control? Check, no control. Second thought. Now it is about not hitting another car nor hitting the fence. Third thought, let it go. I did let it go. I don't know how many times I spun. And by the time I stopped spinning, you know, it's funny because the car was a Mercedes that I had taken. I would never mention this, but it's kind of like to give you the visual. It was a big Mercedes, one of those big four-door 430 Mercedes, ES, whatever, you know, that I had actually bought from my oldest son because he wanted to buy a condo. And I had helped him with the, you know, with the... So the Mercedes had been, like, driven by my son, you know, for years prior to that. So I always felt like it's, I don't know, all that energy there, right? So I'm spinning with this black vehicle, you know, in the middle of the road. And when I stop, I look ahead, completely relaxed, and I realize, and I see... all the cars, you know, almost like coming very slowly towards me, like almost on a stage, you know, like literally on a stage. There was no car around my spinning for some reason, you know. And I go, oh, great. I have enough time to turn around and continue. Exactly the time I had to turn around and continue. I continued driving. And a few yards later, there is a guy on the road with about 10 cars that had an accident, you know, warning people to slow down. So the part of this that's so interesting is that I am convinced that those three thoughts were the ones that completely got me through this situation. Not only that, but after talking about fear, you know, it's like the work I've done with fear, you know, after that, usually, you know, Dave, when you have an adrenaline hit, you know, it always affects a part of your body. You know, your nerves get tense, and then when you relax, it hurts so much. Well, in my life, I always had this, you know, this tension in my thighs, you know, the pain in my thighs. After something like that happened, I would go through, and it was like huge pain in my thighs. Well, this time, no pain. No pain whatsoever. I just float through the situation. You know, and that was when I realized, I go, oh my God, that's power. That I'm ready. I'm ready to do this. Because, of course, you know, if you haven't done it with yourself, what are you doing telling other people? I mean, you can tell people anyway. You know, I believe it with all my heart in what Galileo Galilei said, which is, you know, you cannot teach man anything. You can only guide him to find the answers within. And as I said before, we've been all, you know, through this amnesia treatment, and all we're doing is helping each other remember.
All right, I have another question right along those lines that come out of my chat room.
Sure.
It said, if someone has tried to, quote, think, unquote, a better world into place, but the world has worsened, what advice can you give them?
Well, you know, you cannot. Here's the thing. It's the same thing that Alex was talking about, anger or fear. You know, you cannot really think positive things. There's no amount of positive visualization that you can do if you don't believe it. You have to believe it in your heart as it is already true. That's the feeling that manifests the reality you want. And that's the difficult part. You have to believe it in your heart as it has already happened. So work on believing, I would say. Work on really believing.
What a wonderful answer. Thank you, Luz. That just... it's wonderful. What else
yeah.
can I say?
It's wonderful. Life is so wonderful. If we only live, you know, let the veils go down. Well, but we're getting there. I was listening to your interview with Bill yesterday. Oh my God, I'm so happy. I knew so well everything was going to go that way, you know.
Yes, and he'll be back on Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time.
I know.
With a very special Buffalo talk with Gerald Whitehorse Standing, who is a Cree elder.
Yeah, and you know, along those lines of people, you know, people say, the problem is, you know, this whole thing about the intuition that's so hard to follow because we don't believe in it, you know? It's like if you believe in it, if you take away what you said before, you know, the noise. It's like, this is like finding the frequency in your radio station. Take away those thoughts that are distracting, you know, and then you can actually listen.
My dear, we've run out of time for this.
There you go.
And ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Luz Agorabena.
The daughter of Pedro Piedra Aguirreveña, the Basque.
Thank you.
And
we will be back the first Sunday of next month.
There
so
you go.
If you have questions, you can send them to PigRadio2@air-internet.com, and I'll make a list of those.
And I'll give you a link of my my social network Soul Hangout, so that people can come there, you know, become members, and we have forums and everything there. So I'm going to put this article there so that people can, if they have questions, they can go there and ask questions anytime. Because here's the thing, people need questions answers more answered and listen to the stories. That's the most important thing right now, is the answers to the questions.
All right, okay? My dear, we have to run because JP is going to take over.
There you go.
And I'm playing The Last Dance as we go out.
Okay.
Thank you, Luz. Thank you so much.
It's
the last dance. We've come to the last dance. They're dimming the lights down. They're hoping we'll go. It's obvious. They're aware of us. A pair of us.